You're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent today. And according to Reuters, the former CEO of the cryptocurrency company FTX, Sam Bankman-Fried, secretly siphoned off $10 billion in customer funds from FTX to prop up his other company. Now at least $1 billion of that has gone missing. A week ago, FTX filed for bankruptcy, leaving customers with nothing but questions. But there is a bigger picture brewing beyond FTX about the real value of cryptocurrencies and the future of money. Our guest is here to help explain the crypto universe and answer your questions. Do you have any bitcoins? How are they faring this morning? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email available anytime you need it, ideas@WPR.org. Let us know what you think. Our guest, Lamont Black, an associate professor of finance at the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago. And Lamont, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Lee. Great to be with you.
Yeah, tell us the story of FTX and how it collapsed earlier this month. What happened?
Well, it really started with a story from CoinDesk about FTX's reserves, because it became clear that they had been misusing customers' funds, that they had been over-leveraged, and that they had created their own cryptocurrency, FTT, and a lot of their assets were held in this alternative currency. And it was really like a house of cards. And so as soon as that news came out, one of the other crypto exchanges, Binance, started selling FTT. That created a run on FTX, like an old-fashioned bank run. People started withdrawing their funds, and pretty soon there wasn't enough money to pay the people pulling their money out. And so they had to close their doors. And there's a lot of people whose money just got stuck, and they're probably never going to see it again.
So there was another cryptocurrency company, Binance, that started this run. But as I understood it, at one point, Binance was in line to be FTX's savior, or at least save it from bankruptcy.
Yeah, so the two key players in this whole story, as you said, are Sam Bankman-Fried, the former CEO of FTX, but also a gentleman named CZ, who is the CEO of Binance, which is also a crypto exchange, but more associated with kind of the global market. And FTX and Binance have had a relationship over the years, but that relationship grew more tense over the last few weeks. And it was, an opportunity, I think, that potentially posed itself for Binance to acquire FTX, a competitor. But as soon as Binance started looking into it, they realized that there were several suits already against FTX here in the U.S. about improper management of customer funds. And so that kind of put an end to the deal as soon as it became clear that there were some regulatory concerns.
Was an interpersonal beef to blame here? Was this just CZ and Sam Bankman-Fried? Or was there issues about how to operate cryptocurrency exchanges? What was the disagreement between the two?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go on Twitter, and there's a lot of crypto talk on Twitter, there was a disagreement between them. And part of that was some statements that Sam Bankman-Fried had made directed to CZ. And CZ, I think, ultimately felt that Sam Bankman-Fried was attempting to undercut Binance and other exchanges through really regulatory lobbying here in the U.S. So FTX was a very large political contributor, and some people feel like they were doing so to try and benefit themselves, not the industry as a whole. But I would say over the last week that story has diminished in importance, as it's become clear that really the problem was FTX, that there were a lot of shady things going on there. So it wasn't just this personal feud. It was really a case of financial mismanagement.
Yeah, but Sam Bankman-Fried, the question about financial mismanagement, it was also promoting regulations for this cryptocurrency industry?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the duplicity here. And I think part of what surprised people and really shocked people, because Sam Bankman-Fried had become a, you know, poster boy for the crypto industry. He was on the cover of Forbes magazine. Many people looked to him as being an important leader in this area. He had helped bail out other exchanges earlier in the year during the crypto bear market. And so everyone kind of assumed that things were on the up and up. And I think he was playing to that perception, but then doing things behind the scenes that people had no idea what was really going on.
We're talking about cryptocurrency and wondering what you want to know or maybe are afraid to ask this morning at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Our guest, Lamont Black, an associate professor of finance at DePaul University in Chicago, answering our questions this morning. And so in the bigger picture here, Lamont, how could FTX's failure affect the overall cryptocurrency markets?
Well, it's already had a huge impact, the negative impact on prices. You know, the price of Bitcoin has, you know, it's fallen a lot this year. We're clearly in a bear market, but Bitcoin was pretty steady around $20,000 prior to FTX, and it's now trading under $17,000. So the short-term price impact has been quite large. But I think the longer-term impact is really around perception of risk and fraud. I think, you know, a lot of people are skeptical of cryptocurrency and digital assets because, you know, it's not something they can hold in their hands. It's not the U.S. dollar. And so, you know, adoption has been increasing as people get comfortable with it and start to understand the technology and what you can do with it. But I think this is a huge setback. And there's a lot of people who are crypto curious who are probably just going to stay on the sidelines for a while until the dust settles. But my hope and the hope of many people in this industry is that as the technology grows, as it becomes clear that this was not a failure of the technology, it was really the failure of a particular company, that people will be able to move on and look past that.
All right. So, Lamont, let's take a step back then. And for the crypto curious, tell us a little bit about what cryptocurrency exchanges are supposed to do.
Yeah, so cryptocurrency, the origins are from 2008 with the birth of Bitcoin, and Bitcoin emerged as a way to transfer funds on the internet. So the origins of crypto are really as a payment mechanism, being able to buy and sell things on the internet. But today, most people view it as an investment, like owning Bitcoin the same way you would own stocks, in particular a tech stock. But you, in order to buy crypto, you have to start with, if you're in the U.S., with U.S. dollars. And so if you're buying crypto with U.S. dollars, you have to go through one of these exchanges. And so that's why many people were using FTX as a place to start. But I think what was unclear and really unknown to most of the users is that FTX was not globally housed in the United States. It was actually in the Bahamas. And so that's part of the regulatory disconnect. So now I'm encouraging people to shift their attention to Coinbase. I have no affiliation with Coinbase, but it is a U.S. corporation. It is federally regulated here in the U.S. It's publicly traded on the U.S. stock market. And so, you know, I hope people will be able to consider alternative paths to buy cryptocurrency as an investment because, you know, crypto prices are likely going to fall further. And so no one is, I think, now continuing to think of crypto as an easy get-rich scheme. But as this technology continues into the future, people think, just like the internet emerged in the 1990s, this is a technology of blockchain that it could emerge in our generation. And so I think for the long-term investor, there's still a lot of potential.
Let's get to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234, where Jane and Swamico are standing by. Jane, you're on the air with Lamont Black.
Yes, I don't know a lot about cryptocurrency, but something that's always that I've wondered about is how does the IRS manage purchases made with cryptocurrencies, and is there a lot of tax revenue lost when people use cryptocurrencies to buy things?
Thank you, Jane. Lamont?
Yeah, great question, Jane. So the IRS has gotten very interested in cryptocurrency and digital assets. So that's one of the roles of these exchanges. So if somebody buys cryptocurrency, for instance, on Coinbase, that becomes a transaction that is then recorded by Coinbase. If you have crypto holdings above a certain amount on Coinbase, that will then be reported directly to the IRS, just like holding stock on an online brokerage. And so some of you, the listeners, might know, you know, as you fill out like TurboTax for personal income returns, there's now a question, you know, do you own cryptocurrency or digital assets? Have you sold them for a capital gain? And so this market is gradually becoming more regulated. And so some of it's still self-reporting, but gradually we're moving towards audit trails and disclosures where people who are owning crypto and then selling it for a gain, just like they do in the stock market, that is going to be a taxable event. And the capital gains that apply to stocks will apply to crypto in the same way.
Lamont Black, our guest this hour, as we take a look at the universe of cryptocurrencies and what's next for what is online transactions, online investments, non-fungible tokens, NFTs, FTX, any other confusing acronyms. We'll clarify them for you with our guest, and we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Listening to The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and this hour we're going deep inside this brave new world of cryptocurrencies with our guest and your insight along the way. If you've purchased cryptocurrencies, share your experience with us. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lamont Black's an associate professor of finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago. He's our guest for the hour answering your questions, and let's go straight to him where Aiden in Milwaukee standing by. Aiden, you're on the air with Lamont Black.
Morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's your question?
So I actually had two. I guess my first question is kind of why has Bitcoin become so popular without kind of any real world application as a payment form? And then my second question is more to do with the blockchain technology behind it and just why do people get so excited about it and like what makes it so great?
Aiden, two great questions. And let's start with the blockchain, Lamont. What makes it so great?
Well, yeah, thank you, Aiden. So the two are closely related. So crypto is an application of blockchain. So blockchain is the underlying technology that makes crypto possible. Blockchain is a technology that can be used for other things. So it's not just crypto. You can use it for other types of financial services, supply chain management, healthcare, and so on. And what makes blockchain so, I think, impressive in its potential is it is a distributed ledger technology. So if you think about information today, we live in the information age. And so most of our lives involves storing information, transferring information, whether that's personal records or our different business throughout the day. And so the unfortunate thing about traditional finance is that we have a system in which we have all these separate ledgers. So, you know, a bank account, a credit union account, a stock account, and then all those different ledgers are kind of a data management system in themselves. And then we have to have these systems to communicate and transfer information across those different ledgers. So blockchain as a shared ledger cuts across all of those data silos, if you will, and creates a shared database where now we can transfer information or value anywhere on the internet. And so that's really where it comes into play with cryptocurrency. So Bitcoin, if you find the white paper, you can go to bitcoin.org. It's only about 9 pages long. And I would encourage you to read it because the title is Peer-to-Peer Electronic Cash, being able to transfer value from one digital wallet to another digital wallet to anybody around the world. And so it's really money for the internet. And so even though people are not buying pizza and coffee with Bitcoin, I do think one of the exercises I do with my students, I teach a cryptocurrency class, is I have them set up digital wallets. And then during class, we will start sending funds back and forth to one another using these digital wallets. And you can actually see the transactions in real time on the blockchain. And so it becomes very clear of like, oh, well, this is a system for recording transactions on the internet. And so instead of using something like Venmo or Zelle, which are highly intermediated through the banking system, they're built on older payment rails, I think blockchain will likely emerge as an alternative payment rail where now you can send value to another person real time, peer to peer, in a much more efficient way. And so I think it's going to be a competitor to Visa and MasterCard in the near future. And then ultimately, it's about what other types of applications can we build on blockchain? So Lee mentioned non-fungible tokens or NFTs. That's recording ownership on a blockchain. And so in the arts community, as you create digital art and that art is now on the internet, how do you record ownership of something if it's on the web? Well, that's what an NFT does. So now you have property rights. Now you can track the purchase and sale of these digital assets on a blockchain. And so it's really a record-keeping system for the internet. And so it's not just about people buying goods and services. It's really with this shared database, how can we do things more efficiently in a digital economy?
Let's go back to your questions now about cryptocurrencies this hour at 1-800-642-1234, where Mary in Menominee standing by. Mary, you're on the air with Lamont Black.
Hi. Hello, Professor Black. Yes, I have a question a little bit about, as you know, Binance is under quite a bit of investigation, not only in the United States, but in other countries around the world. And they had pretended or thought they were going to be rescuing FTX. I'm wondering a little bit about Bitcoin USD that it also appears in their portfolio fairly recently, tied to the potential liquidity of cryptocurrency to increase that liquidity at the same time that the BUSD, as I understand, is 1-to-1 on the U.S. dollar. And is there a potential relationship? Binance is a Chinese company based in the Caymans, as you alluded to. With Changpeng Zhao as the owner of that, suspicious-looking board. Bottom line, the money that's gone missing, $2 billion, and then now $10 billion potentially. What is the possibility of Binance funneling that money through BUSD into other uses? And should President Biden have been talking to Xi Jinping about money over to Russia for Ukraine, for example? And
I just want to ask you as a follow-up here, because I'm kind of losing your thread. It's a little more complicated than I can grasp with cryptocurrency, but are you suggesting that Binance may be manipulating these cryptocurrency markets?
Well, I'm wondering, tied to why they need the 1-to-1 Bitcoin U.S. dollar, if it's set up that way so it's pegged to the dollar, does that allow the easier funneling of lost money?
Mary, thank you for the question. Lamont, I understand that stable coins are cryptocurrencies that are tied to actual real currencies and in an effort to, as I understand it, stabilize. But yeah, how would you answer Mary's questions about the role that Binance is playing in the bigger picture of these markets?
Yeah, so I'll touch on both of those. I think it's a great question. So I would say that the role of Binance in this story about FTX and in general with the global markets is complicated. So, as I mentioned in the introductory remarks, they did have some role in the liquidity run on FTX. And I think people are still looking into that and whether that was, potentially a form of manipulation. I think that's still unclear. But, Binance, I think, has tried to issue what are now called proof of reserves to convince investors that they aren't doing things similar to FTX and that their holdings are much more stable and secure. But to your point, Mary, Binance is not a U.S. regulated firm. And so Binance, is more of a global exchange. At times, they have tried to exist without any national headquarters, because if you think of crypto as borderless money, Bitcoin itself is unregulatable because it doesn't exist in any sovereign jurisdiction. Then exchanges like Binance have tried to exist in that same sort of kind of cyberspace or sovereign entity that exist outside of these country limits. But that, I think, has come under pressure in recent years. And so CZ is trying to figure out how to fall in line with regulatory compliance. And I think that relationship with the U.S. will likely evolve. But for now, you know, U.S. investors, actually, it's very difficult to invest through Binance because of that existence outside of U.S. regulation. But is it coming back to stablecoins? So, you know, Binance has their version of a stablecoin. There have been other versions earlier this year that came under pressure as well, and one of them that even collapsed. The two main stablecoins here in the U.S. are USDC or USD Coin and Tether, USDT. And the whole idea of a stablecoin is to peg cryptocurrency to what's called fiat currency. So the U.S. dollar is fiat currency, meaning it's not backed by gold. We went off the gold standard in 1971.
Lamont, I got to stop you there. I've got news coming up, but I want to follow up on these stable coins and what they mean for the overall cryptocurrency markets. And I want to continue with the questions from our callers at 1-800-642-1234. We're deep into the crypto universe right now with our guest, DePaul University Professor Lamont Black. This is The Morning Show. This is The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer Kent today. And if you had purchased $1,000 worth of the cryptocurrency Bitcoin on the same day that Matt Damon's TV ad for Crypto.com premiered just a little more than a year ago, your $1,000 would have been worth about $275 as of this morning. Four ads promoting cryptocurrency aired during this year's Super Bowl, with LeBron James now touting Crypto.com, and Larry David, you may remember, making the case for the now bankrupt FTX. In the last few months, Crypto.com has reportedly cut a quarter of its staff, and the company's CEO has taken to Twitter, YouTube, and the airwaves to try to reassure customers that their company remains financially sound. We shall see. And what questions do you have about the future of currency and your money? Join us, 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Lamont Black, I cut him off earlier, the Associate Professor of Finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago. We were deep in the discussion of stable coins, which are part of the cryptocurrencies that are tied to fiat currencies, real currencies, as you were explaining, Lamont, like the U.S. dollar. But if these stable coins are cryptocurrencies tied to the U.S. dollar, why not just use the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lee. So as you said, Bitcoin has lost a lot of its value over the last year. And so when people think about crypto, they think about the volatility of Bitcoin, and that makes a lot of people nervous. So stable coins are designed to be pegged to fiat currency. So like one stable coin equals one US dollar. But then the benefit is really in the blockchain. So a stable coin has the value of cryptocurrency, but the technology behind the stablecoin is the blockchain. So if you want to transfer value from one person to another on the internet, you can do so using a stablecoin, and then you don't have to go through the traditional banking system. You don't have to go through Visa and MasterCard. So it really is about how do you take the benefits of fiat currency, the stability of the US dollar and its value, but then build that on the technology of blockchain. That's what a stablecoin is designed to do. So if listeners are thinking about investing in crypto, but they're worried about losing money in Bitcoin, they could buy a stablecoin on Coinbase. You could buy USDC, and that value will stay there pegged to the US dollar, and you can actually earn interest on your stablecoins. And so this is a technology that is growing and becoming more common, and it's all built on this same platform of blockchain.
And the stories I understood or learned about stablecoin when I saw stablecoins becoming unstable for some of these cryptocurrencies earlier this year, how hard is it to keep it tied to a fiat currency?
Yeah, so the one that collapsed earlier this year was Luna Terra, or UST. So that was a stable coin that's called an algorithmic stable coin. And, you know, it's probably too complicated to get into for this call, but it wasn't backed by any asset. It was simply one cryptocurrency pegged to another cryptocurrency. Mm. And so what's different about the ones I mentioned, so USDC and Tether, is that these are fiat cryptocurrencies backed by fiat assets, so dollar equivalent assets. And so USDC is regularly audited by Grant Thornton to bring more transparency to the amount of those reserves. And so there are certainly questions about stablecoins. I think stablecoins will become more regulated. That's one of the agendas in Washington, D.C. in Congress, is how to regulate stablecoins to maintain that stability. But I think the concept is certainly very compelling. And it's, so it's really about the implementation to make sure that those reserves are sufficient to maintain that one-to-one peg.
Back to your cryptocurrency questions now at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Marion Pewaukee, you're on the air with Lamont Black.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. A bit back, 4 years ago or so, I did invest kind of a windfall of money, but not more than we could lose, in XYO Network. I don't know if it's one of those stable coins or a Bitcoin. Actually, the most I know is probably what I've just learned now, and thank you for that. can you tell me anything about it and what I should do with it? I only invested $500, and they also gave me an opportunity to actually, I believe they were going on the stock market.
XYO is what it is, Mary?
Yes, it is. XYO Network.
Thank you.
And I'm looking at a hat they gave me.
Lamont, what do we know?
Well, so XYO is an example of, you know, these cryptocurrencies that there are now 10,000 of them out there. And so XYO is not a stable coin. And so, you know, one of the concerns I have about this in general, this market, is people, frankly, in this example, like yourself, who own something without being fully sure what it is or how to access it. And so, you know, I would, to be honest, I would encourage you to try and sell it and to get out. You've probably lost some of that value already, but, you know, this is a market that can change very quickly. And so there's a lot of talk about do your own research to try and understand what something is. Just like if you're going to buy a stock, you want to make sure you understand what that company is and whether it has value. And so, you know, me personally, I encourage people, if they're going to invest in cryptocurrency, to only invest in, say, the top 10 cryptocurrencies. So there's a website called coinmarketcap.com that ranks all of the cryptocurrencies by market capitalization. So just like you have large cap stocks and small cap stocks, you have large cap crypto and small cap crypto. And the big one is Bitcoin. The second one is Ethereum. You know, those are where many people start when they buy crypto. And so if you're unfamiliar with XYO, I would say, you know, rather than trying to go in and figure out exactly what that is, you might want to try and get out and consider investing in a cryptocurrency that's a little more mainstream, like Bitcoin or Ethereum.
Thank you. Let's continue with your questions now. Eric and Phillips, you're next with DePaul University Associate Professor of Finance, Lamont Black.
Yes. Hi, good morning. Looking into the carbon usage per transaction of Bitcoin, saw some quick numbers like the equivalent of 1.2 million Visa transactions or watching YouTube for 100,000 hours. I know Ethereum has switched to a method that isn't as energy intensive, but I haven't heard of Bitcoin doing that. I'm a little afraid of all these coins, and if the blockchain is that intensive, are we, why would we move our financing to a method that's just going to scorch the earth long term, since global warming is such a concern here?
Eric, thank you. The greenback, but what about cryptocurrencies being green, Lamont?
Yes. So, Eric, that's certainly a legitimate concern about cryptocurrency. My students obviously are concerned about that. Myself, you know, I don't want to be supporting a technology that is going to destroy the environment. And I think that's a very legitimate concern with Bitcoin. So with blockchain, you have to have something called a consensus mechanism. So blockchain is decentralized. And so in order to run a blockchain, you have to have a way of verifying transactions on a blockchain. And that's what the consensus mechanism is. We're reaching agreement on these transactions. And then in the case of Bitcoin, that's what mining is. So miners are not digging for digital gold. They're verifying transactions on the Bitcoin blockchain. But as most of us have now heard, Bitcoin mining is very energy intensive. And so there are a lot of statistics about how much energy is being used. Now, to be fair, there are a lot of Bitcoin folks who would defend Bitcoin using that consensus mechanism. They would argue, you know, that a lot of the energy sources are shifting from coal to more renewable energy. A lot of that energy is being captured from use cases where the energy is going to waste, like a natural gas fissure, so that you are then kind of capturing energy that would not have been used otherwise. So there certainly is a case to defend Bitcoin, even in its current form of mining. I don't think Bitcoin is going to change, but you pointed out Ethereum, the Ethereum merge, which occurred in September. They transitioned from mining to staking, which is a different consensus mechanism. And it wasn't just like reducing energy costs by like 10 to 15%. It's like 0.01% of the total energy cost. And so it was a massive reduction in the energy consumption of Ethereum as the number two leading blockchain. And so I wouldn't dismiss that too quickly. I do think that shifting from what's called proof of work to proof of stake is a very large improvement in the energy impact of crypto. And it also points to how innovative this space is. I don't think that this environmental impact is the Achilles heel of crypto. As the technology evolves, as they figure out how to do this more efficiently, I think we're building blockchains that can run at scale with a much lower energy footprint. And so I think the space will continue to evolve in that direction.
Thank you. We're talking about what's happening in the world of cryptocurrencies after the collapse of one of its biggest exchanges, FTX. Lamont Black is an associate professor of finance at DePaul University in Chicago, here to answer your questions for the hour at 1-800-642-1234, where John in Palmyra is next. John, you're on the air.
Hello. It seems like illegal use, illegal transfer of funds by criminals or terrorists. Is one of the big uses of crypto, and that it can be done without government or anyone else knowing that it's happening. And I wonder what you had to say about that. And then I wonder if you'd explain how it differs from a Ponzi scheme.
Couple of questions there, and let's begin with the concerns over using it for illegal activity, potentially terrorism, Lamont.
Yeah, that certainly is the history of crypto. So I think we all have to acknowledge that it has been used by criminals. Silk Road is a good example of that. But I think it's also important to realize this is a technology, and the technology has been used for some of those purposes in the past. But I would argue that technology is a tool. It is neutral. And so it's how do we use this technology for good purposes? And so I think as crypto goes more mainstream, there's going to be more regulation. There's going to be more identity verification at these entry points. And so that intersection with traditional finance is going to be an area where we're going to see a lot more transparency, I think, in the years ahead. So even though that is part of the past of crypto, I think less and less that will be the future of crypto. And I think it's also important to point out that the U.S. dollar is often used for criminal activity. A lot of criminals transact in the $100 bill, but that doesn't mean that the U.S. dollar is a bad idea. So it's how do we continue to transition towards these more positive use cases?
And the other question, Lamont, was about the how cryptocurrency is valued. If it's not backed by anything like stock or dollars, as John put it, is this a Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, I think that is a common concern about crypto, which I think is a legitimate concern because ultimately it's just zeros and ones. You know, there's nothing physical behind cryptocurrency. But I would like to point out that there's nothing physical behind the U.S. dollar. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we're not on the gold standard. There's no object or hard currency behind that. And so even the dollar is just in the faith and credit of the U.S. government. But, you know, I understand a lot of people still put a lot of value in that. So with cryptocurrency, it's not a question of intrinsic value because it's not something physical that you can eat or drink. So it's not the kind of the intrinsic use case. It's more how can we use this to transfer value, for instance. So again, going back to the Bitcoin white paper, the ability to have an address on a blockchain, and that blockchain is recorded on the internet. And now I can transfer value from one person to another person on the internet, peer-to-peer real time. That, I think, is a valuable use case. And so if you think about the birth of e-commerce in the 1990s, when we started to buy and sell goods on eBay, that was the birth of PayPal as a payment mechanism for paying for those goods and services. But PayPal is really just a digital interface for this existing payment system that we had from the 1970s. And so as we move towards a digital economy, I think we need a form of digital currency. I think we need a form of digital assets. We need a system to record that digital currency and digital assets. And so to me, it's a natural evolution of where we've been and then where we're headed.
Associate Professor of Finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago, Lamont Black, laying out the land of the cryptocurrency universe for us in a way that I can understand. And taking your questions before we're done this morning at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and let's get right back to it. The currencies created online by the blockchain that we call crypto. After a big bankruptcy of FTX, the cryptocurrency exchange this week, what's next? Your questions continue at 1-800-642-1234. Our guest, Lamont Black, is an associate professor of finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago, answering our questions about the world of cryptocurrency. Paul in Northern Illinois, you're next. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
What do you have for us?
It's very difficult for me. I have a history in technology. I've been in tech for 30 years. When I saw crypto arrive on the scene, I get it. The fascination with it is amazing. Obviously, it's got so many people's attention that we've got billions of dollars going into this. But fundamentally, I think what we have is a push toward anarchy. I know this might sound extreme, but truthfully, we don't see the U.S. dollar, it can be traded digitally. I do it all the time. I sell people personal money. Yes, an institution involves themselves, but that's the regulatory mechanism. So right now we have sovereign nations with their currencies, and if we wanted a global currency, then those nations need to get together and work. They need to do that on other platforms as well. But as far as currency goes, having some company and some shadow group of people regulate it's impossible. And so the whole thing is really just dishonest and anarchistic.
Paul, I appreciate the comment. Dishonest and anarchistic. Are there regulations and protections that could overcome Paul's concern as you see it, Lamont?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Paul. And I think there are certainly some people in the crypto movement who have that anarchist bent. You know, it is money without government and without banks. But if you think about, first of all, your example of Zelle, as you mentioned, Zelle is a, you know, platform owned by the U.S. banks. And so, you know, in order to operate that platform, a lot of other institutions have to pay Zelle a lot of money. Zelle has its own set of issues, and Zelle doesn't operate outside of the US. And so I think these systems that have developed are still heavily intermediated, even though they are digital. I think another trend towards this direction in the digitization of money related to what you mentioned is central banks issuing digital currency. So a CBDC, central bank digital currency, is likely going to be on the scene in the next few years, even here in the U.S.
So the U.S. Treasury, I'm sorry, Lamont, yeah, the U.S. Federal Reserve would issue its own crypto?
Yes, so I'm a former Federal Reserve economist, and so, you know, my background is actually in monetary policy, and that's where the Fed is headed. They issued a white paper in January saying that they are exploring a digital dollar. So we're moving towards digital money. Whether crypto is part of that future, I think it will be. But you're correct that we need more regulation. So I don't think it's crypto or not crypto. It's more, how do we regulate crypto in a way that's more safe and sound for U.S. consumers?
But if this is an international currency without borders, how is a nation state going to begin to regulate it?
So you cannot regulate the blockchain itself. That is true. So Bitcoin, in its essence, is unregulatable. But as soon as Bitcoin touches fiat currency, then that becomes a regulatable event. So to the extent that people want to buy crypto with US dollars, for instance, on Coinbase, you have to provide all your personal information. You have to upload a picture of your driver's license so that they know exactly who you are. And then I think what we're going to see is as people are starting to connect cryptocurrency to, for instance, to a financial institution. So many credit unions here in the US are starting to offer crypto to their members, but they are verifying the identity of that user in the process. And so I think these two worlds are gradually starting to intersect. And so to the extent that they overlap, then that does become regulatable. And that's where I think the future is likely going to be.
Back to your questions with the time we have left. Mike in La Crosse, you are on with Lamont Black. Mike, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Mike. How are you doing?
Good. What's your question?
I put some money into FTX about 8 months ago after I did a lot of research. So I lost $800. And my question would be, and I'm okay with that. I've dealt with the stock market before, but just for your caller, if I would say, okay, I have another $800 and I want to put it into Coinbase. To give you an idea, I put $300 on the sidelines of cash in FTX. Then the other $500 I split between Solana and Bitcoin. I tried to get the $300 cash back, but it said it went through, but it never showed up. So I'm just wondering, if I went into Coinbase with $800, what would your caller recommend I invest my money in?
Well, we're not here for giving financial advice, but would Coinbase be a good start to Lamont? Would that be a stable start for the crypto system as you see it?
Yeah, I do think it's a good start. But, to the caller's point, I do think one important concept here as it relates to crypto before we end this conversation is FTX was a centralized exchange. And so when you own crypto on a centralized exchange, if that exchange goes bankrupt, you're likely going to lose that crypto. And so that principle still applies to Coinbase. I want to be clear about that. Okay. Coinbase is a great place to start, but ultimately you want to consider setting up a digital wallet where you own your own cryptocurrency, you own what's called the private key. So MetaMask, M-E-T-A, Mask, MetaMask is a digital wallet that you can set up where you actually own your own crypto. It's not on an exchange. And so it's not subject to any of these risks that we've just encountered like FTX.
It's a strange new world out there, Lamont Black. And I want to thank you so much for laying out the land as you see it and give us a perspective of what the future holds for currency and our money. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Lee.
Lamont Black, Associate Professor of Finance in the Driehaus College of Business at DePaul University in Chicago. And thanks for all your questions this morning. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you've been listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.